So let's look at the work of a wonderful archaeologist, a woman named Maria Gimbutas, who is one of the major archaeologists who's done some of the key, most crucial work on the early goddess cultures of old Europe. She did 5 major excavations of her own in Greece and the Balkans. She also spoke and read 15 different languages, so she was a renowned expert on all the archaeology of Eastern Europe. She was a refugee from Lithuania who came to the United States after World War II and eventually became chair of the Department of Indo-European Studies at UCLA. And when she began her career, she was looking at the Bronze Age, at this slightly later period where civilization started to develop weapons, was very much focused around war and cultures of chieftains. While she was looking at all that, she was a highly respected archaeologist, world-renowned, wrote all of these books that were the classics in that field. But then she began to look at the earlier period. She began to delve back into the Neolithic. The Neolithic is a term that means New Stone Age, and that is the term for that time when culture shifted from hunter-gathering to early agriculture. And what she found there in Europe were cultures that celebrated the principles of life and were based very much on these images, female images of power, images of the goddess. She looked at artifacts from all over Europe and the Middle East and developed a theory that she could see in the patterns of the images and the symbols clues to the religion of these early people. And she grouped these images of the goddess into what she eventually saw as 3 sort of major aspects of the goddess of life, or 3 major groupings of different goddesses. In some sense, to me, it's not so important whether you see these as aspects of one goddess or different goddesses, because even the different goddesses are aspects of this underlying oneness of life. The first groupings were the goddesses of birth-giving, of life, of spring, of renewal, and they were symbolized by the birth-giving goddess. Many, many images of birth-giving goddesses all over Europe, by the mother and child. You can find statues of mother and child going back 6,000, 8,000 years that predate the Madonna of Christianity. The bear and the deer were animals associated with that aspect of the goddess. Another aspect of the goddess was the death aspect. Death was always associated with regeneration. And so you'll see the death aspect of the goddess was connected with the sort of stiff, bone-like goddess figures that you find like in the Cycladic Islands, the islands off the coast of Greece. They call them sometimes the violin goddesses. They're very abstract and they're often made of white marble. White was the color of death in old Europe in this period, not black. Black was associated with birth and with fertile soil and with life. But white was the color of bone and snow and dried up, desiccated earth. So it was associated with death. The death goddesses are also connected to the owl and the vulture. And they're often marked with the sign of life, however, which was the vulva, the triangle, the fertile part of the woman where life comes back from, because death was always connected with regeneration. And finally, there is the goddess who she associates with the continuance, the maintenance of life, with spring, with renewal, with all of those elements that support life, particularly with water and with the life-giving rains. And she calls that the bird and snake goddess. And you'll see figures that are marked with meanders that represent water, with V shapes that look like bird wings or bird beaks. All of those kinds of images, flowers, plants, images of spring. And those are connected with this idea of renewal. And one of the things that Maria said over and over again is that the goddess is not just about fertility, although fertility is important, but she's really about this quality of regeneration. She's about the way the cycles of life and the cycles of the earth continually renew themselves over and over again and come back again and again. Now, her theories are very controversial. And of course, you know, many people, when she started writing about this, she got widely attacked and suddenly she wasn't so respectable. And you can always go back and find a detail here or something there to criticize. But if you actually look at her material, and I really do recommend getting some of her books and looking at them, you just see these images that are overwhelming over and over again of all of these patterns, all of these symbols, all of these aspects of life. And when you think about the concept of, you know, the symbol of the sacred being the triangle, being the vulva, which goes all the way back to the Paleolithic caves. You know. I mean, to me, it's just kind of a real shift in our consciousness to think what it would be like to live in a culture where the sign of the vulva was the sign of holiness and where the human body was considered something that was sacred, something that was holy, something that was an aspect of life and that was an aspect of the most potent, fertile, life-giving, connecting power in the universe, and not something that was sort of dirty and suspect and you should be ashamed of it. I think it puts us into a different world. And to me, it's one of the important reasons for studying this history and for looking at these images is that it shifts our consciousness. Carol Christ, a wonderful theologian long ago, said that we can't just get rid of a negative image or a symbol and leave a vacuum, that we need to replace it with something, or our minds don't really make that shift. When we look back at those cultures, you also see in the archaeological record that they were pretty much egalitarian. You'll see lots of small shrines, but no huge centralized temples. You'll see women and men apparently roughly equal. You'll see women having a lot of power in society. You can tell by the grave goods, by the things they're buried with, that they were part of the beginnings of all the things that we think of as the arts of civilization. Pottery, weaving, architecture, house building, all of those aspects. They weren't yet separated by gender and said, you know, women should just sit home and do nothing and men should do all the fun things. You know, women had a really important role in all of the public life of a culture. And the period we're talking about, just to be clear, in what Maria called old Europe, really goes back to, in some areas, 9,000, 10,000 before the Common Era. But in most places, we're talking about around roughly 7,000 to about 3,500 before the Common Era. Some places like in Crete, where this culture managed to survive for 2,000 years more, it wasn't until about 1400, 1500 BCE that it was taken over. It's also important to understand that this is a strata that underlies European and Middle Eastern society, and it changed very much as society became patriarchal. I'm going to talk a bit about that too. But when we look at European culture today and what we call Western culture, what we're actually seeing is a kind of amalgam of two systems. And this deep underlying system that celebrates life, celebrates the goddess, sees life, sees sexuality, sees the earth, sees all the cycles of nature as sacred, is very much the grounding of what changed later. And when we look at many later cultures and later aspects, you're constantly seeing, you know, bits of this old sensibility resurfacing again. You can find it in folklore, you can find it in mythology, you can find it in fairy tales, you can find it in art, and you can even find it in the mainstream, so-called mainstream religions. You know, especially if you look at Christianity, you'll see the images of the Virgin Mary very much carry on all the ancient images of the goddess.